Hello, Internet. My name is Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And this week on the Screen Verdict Podcast, we're returning to the land of film.
Yeah, we've done a few TV ones, but that's okay. I think people like TV.
I like TV.
It's the new cinema.
Well, today we're going to be talking about old cinema.
Yeah, cinema.
With a review of The Monuments Men.
Mm, and it doesn't get much bigger than this, does it?
Everybody's been talking about it.
Yeah. And how could you not?
How many Oscars did it win?
They moved it into out of the awards calendar season, so it's eligible for next year's Oscars.
Oh, yet to be seen.
So it could break the record for most Oscars ever won by a movie.
We'll be making that prediction later in the podcast. Yeah. So a lot of the hype around the film...
Oh yeah, it's hyper.
...would stem from George Clooney being behind it.
Yes.
You may have heard of George Clooney.
Yeah, and the hype is so big, I think even David Stratton, a former person mentioned on the podcast...
podcast mentionee.
Yeah. Said the film had a lot of potential. So... in his review. So, there you go.
George Clooney, famous for his acting, but he's also dabbled a little bit in the writing, directing, getting behind the camera.
Mm. Well, he's even got an Oscar nomination for his directing, so take that for what it's worth.
Perhaps not utilising his natural talents, and by that I mean his looks, to its fullest potential.
Mm.
But let's talk a little bit about some of the films he's done.
Yes, and if we talked about this in our Ides of March podcast, apologies, it was a while ago.
I think I've seen one more since then, so okay. An updated opinion on Clooney's directorial abilities.
Great. I've seen all his directorial films.
Do you like him?
I do. I think he's a pretty good director. His first one was Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, written by Charlie Kaufman.
See, my perception of that film is that it was a Charlie Kaufman film ruined by George Clooney.
I think that's what Charlie Kaufman believed. Yeah, it was not as good as the other Charlie Kaufman films I have seen, but it wasn't like, if I'm comparing it to non-Charlie Kaufman films, it was okay. So, maybe he shouldn't have directed that one. But anyway, that was his first film. Then he did Good Night and Good Luck.
You really like this film.
I really like this film. I thought it was really good. I thought it was a bit of a weak year for this film that year, but it was probably my favourite from that year.
Whoa.
Maybe second favourite.
I watched this knowing that you were a pretty big fan of it, and I ended up enjoying it, but felt a little let down. Like, I felt like it was building to something great, and then at the end of it, I thought, yeah, that was worth watching. Got me through another 2 hours on this plane ride, but wouldn't be putting it on any lists.
Yeah, it was pretty beautiful.
Mm.
What about a top 10 list of films from 2005?
The Life Aquatic?
Yeah.
10 times?
What about a list of...
I hope that's even 2005.
What about a list of top 10 biopics from 2005?
Top 10 black and white biopics. Yeah. It's got a good shot.
Yeah. We could top that list. I'm not usually a biopic fan, but I really like that one. I thought it looked beautiful. Great use of black and white.
Great smoke.
Good performance. Yeah.
Well ahead of Mad Men.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. So then he did Leatherheads with John Krasinski and himself and Renee Zellweger, a bit of a screwball nod to the olden days sort of comedies.
I've not seen this one.
It's fun. It's not
great. Do you recommend it?
If you've got like an hour or two to kill on a plane, it would be a good movie to watch. Like, it's a fun movie. Nothing amazing about it, but a good kind of film, and not the kind of film you see heaps of these days. So I appreciated it for what it was.
And then everyone knows our opinions on the Ides of March.
What were they again?
All listened to the podcast.
I can't remember what weird and I gave that film.
I think about a 7.
Yeah, it was good.
It was good.
We liked it, but...
It had Gosling.
Yeah.
Would have struggled without him.
Yeah. Some good performances there. And now, Monuments Men. Now, why were we excited to see Monuments Men? Was it the Clooney factor?
For me, it wasn't the Clooney factor.
There is only one correct alternate reason to want to see this film than the Clooney factor. What was your other reason?
Bob Balaban.
Oh, no. That was not the right reason. No. You have failed the test.
The correct answer, of course, is Bill Murray.
The Murray factor.
The Murray factor. We're a fan of Bill Murray to the point where in our anniversary showdown podcast, he got his own category.
Yeah.
The best Bill Murray film since 2000.
Mm. And a Bill Murray film won.
Another award for Bill Murray's mantelpiece.
Yeah. We decided not to give that one to Sean Penn. For me, it was the Murray and Clooney factor. I think these are probably the two coolest guys in Hollywood, and to put them together, and great actors, two of the best actors in Hollywood, two of the coolest guys in Hollywood, putting them together spelt, I should probably see this.
Yeah, one of the most popular links, article things I see people share on Facebook is that 10 Bill Murray stories you'll never believe.
Yeah.
And it's just him doing stuff that you'd never expect a celebrity to do. Just him just rocking up at some random college party, or him hanging out with Wu-Tang Clan, or him stealing a golf cart and driving it down the highway naked. Yeah. Not naked, drunk, or whatever it was. Whatever craziness that Bill Murray gets up to.
See, I expected all those things the second time someone posted that on my Facebook. Was that one of the articles where it then ends with, like, and number six will really surprise you? Number four, you wouldn't believe.
Those articles you can never just scroll down. You've always got to click next to get to the... And there's like, number 17 will shock you. You're like, I'm not clicking a button 17 times, loading all those pages to find out something that's not going to shock me.
Here's my problem with those. I sort of don't want to click on them because I feel like it's so written in a way that makes you click on them. But I also want to see what that thing is because I know I'm not going to be as shocked or as happy or as surprised or as amazed as they're claiming. And I want to be justifiably angry at that being a misleading title. But I can't do that unless I actually click on it and read it to see how lame it is compared to their build-up. But then I do it, and there's not even anyone to complain to. Like, I can't, like, write a comment on the blog post. Like, who's going to read that?
Is this, like, the watching reality TV of blog articles? Like, I know I'm just going to... If I watch The Hills, I'm going to hate it.
Yeah, yes.
But I can't hate The Hills...
Until I've watched it. Yes. It's the...
So Clooney's in it, Murray's in it, but it's also got quite a few other...
Well, Bob Balaban's not a bad reason to see a movie.
We like Bob Balaban and Moonrise Kingdom.
John Goodman. I love John Goodman.
He's an Oscar-winning factor.
Not in the sense that he's won an Oscar.
No, more...
you said Oscar-winning factor, not Oscar-winning actor.
Right. As in, we came up with the rule that, well, didn't really hold this year, but 2 years in a row, John Goodman appeared in the Oscar-winning film.
Yeah, The Artist and Argo.
Mm.
And then...
Maybe it's only films starting with the letter A that stars John Goodman wins Best Pictures.
Maybe this rule got screwed by the Monuments Men people taking this movie out of the Oscar race for last year.
And the original title of the film was The Art Retrievers.
Yes. Yes. So, anyway. We're pretty excited for this cast. And John Dujardin from The Artist is in this too, and he's a pretty charming, fun guy.
And Matt Damon.
Yes, he's it pretty cool too. Going. And Cate Blanchett. This is Oscar. Like, this is a deep cast. And Hugh Bonneville, Mr. Downton himself. I don't think his surname's Downton in the show, but I always call him Mr. Downton.
I didn't think it was.
No.
I didn't know the show well enough to call you out.
Yeah, I think.
So that's the monster cast for the film. The premise, the story, is that these characters are in, I guess, the closing stages of World War II.
Mm.
It appears that, you know, the Allies are pushing forward and they're Germans are on the retreat.
Yeah.
But along the way, they are stealing or destroying all these precious artworks.
Nazis are the sorest losers.
I was going to say, for their many good qualities...
You can't say that.
Never been...
You can't say that.
Good losers. All right. And we know that this is a problem. This is something that we can't let happen because of the impassioned speeches from George Clooney, most of which are shared in the trailer.
Yeah.
As to why there is a historical and cultural significance to these pieces of artwork.
Okay, well, this is a big question for the movie, and a big message of the movie is the importance of these artworks. Did George Clooney convince you about the importance of this, of these artworks?
I'm going to give a light yes.
Mm.
I was like, okay, yeah, we should probably get them back.
I'd agree. I really was expecting a better argument in the movie than the one we got. Like, if this was Bartlett from the West Wing, I feel like we would have, like, been leaving the cinema going, this was the greatest accomplishment of the war. Like, these artworks were saved. Like, this was... And I thought it was also weird that George kept on referring to our culture. But these are all European artworks. This is not... You can't now claim that... Like, I don't... You know, he's... He should have said their culture, not our culture. Like, the Mona Lisa is not part of American culture.
They didn't save this so that 60 years in the future they could be selling T-shirts at street vendors that say, "Welcome to NY," with the Mona Lisa on them.
Yeah, because one of the points was that they weren't taking the artwork. They didn't want to find the artworks to take back to America, because usually that's what happens in war. Like, whoever finds the artworks...
Spoils.
Yeah, I was going to say finders keepers, but yeah, to the victor goes the spoils is more the war terminology. So yeah, but it's weird he sort of had that view that it's their artwork, not ours, but then whenever he's talking about it, he was going, this is our culture we're saving.
So after we learn that these are very important artworks, I guess it's a matter of tracking down clues as to where they are, where they're being held.
Well, after you get the ragtag team of treasure hunters assembled.
I guess because only people over the age of 50 have any interest in art.
Yeah.
So they get the dad's army of sorts.
Yes, it is a bit of a dad's army.
Rounded together.
They've even got the smoother talking younger guy like dad's army had in Jean Dujardin.
And I guess I was interested in this around 30 or so minutes in. But I kind of felt like, as a detective story goes, like, I think if you were comparing this to, say, you know, True Detective from last week.
Yeah.
It was a lot less layered. There was a lot less going on between the characters. There was a lot less clues to find. There was a lot less digging around the meaning of this. Ooh, that was a red herring or a dead end or... It's just kind of like, go here, oh, we're just behind them. Go here, just behind them, or go here. And then you know, like, at the end of the movie, they're just eventually going to catch up with them. And how they catch up with them was just like a development that could have occurred 90 minutes earlier in the film.
Well, firstly, I think True Detective is like a 7-hour, anthology drama. And this is sort of a more lighthearted 90-minute or 2-hour, probably, romp. So I don't think you're going to get the layers of True Detective in this film.
Well, what's a good detective film?
Look, can I not go with the detective analogy? And do you know what film I was hoping this, like, while watching it, was wishing it was a bit more like? National Treasure.
National Treasure's great.
Yeah, like, I really thought that was, like, fun finding clues and tracking down the treasure and stuff. I thought that was a fun movie.
I think you raise a good point there. I think a large problem I had this film was the tone, because a film like National Treasure just kind of goes with the fast-paced action comedy angle. It's twists and turns up and down, and it keeps you on the edge of your seat, and it's entertaining. Whereas this had tongue-in-cheek moments, light-hearted moments, but it never really landed. The pace was never really kept up with what it needed to, and the humour didn't really land. Most of the jokes you get are in the trailer. I mean, you're really struggling with your script if you've got Bill Murray and is basically the comedic relief character, and he's not even making me laugh.
Yeah, and then you're, like, seeing where he's just, like, in a shower for, like, 3 minutes listening to, like, a tape from his, like, wife or something. Like, this is, why are we watching? Like, that's not why I'm sitting watching Monuments
Man. Yeah, and that's the other problem, that it's gone half the lighthearted route, and then half is tried to be quite serious, almost, you know, like other World War II films, like a Schindler's List or something. But it felt kind of a little cheesy or a little bit lightweight, like it just didn't have the impact that it was going for.
Yeah.
So it kind of fell flat on both angles. Whereas if it had just been like a serious film or a lighthearted film, it might have had a better chance at succeeding.
Yeah, here's what I think they should have done, right? They should have gone, this is a treasure hunting movie. This is a movie about finding clues and tracking down art. That's it, right? That's what the movie is. Now it's war. People are going to die, maybe. And then you can have like a sort of short scene of reflection on the tragedy of war. You can do that. Like, and you don't break the tone. That could be a nice way to add the film a bit of poignancy. And then you frame it around the George Clooney speeches that set the stakes as to why finding this art is important.
Mm. Yeah, I would agree with that. Well, speaking of teams.
Yes.
The team breaks up, I guess, into some sub-teams.
Yeah.
We get some little partnerships going on.
Yeah.
That's been proven to be the best way to find stolen treasure.
Yeah, pair up, go out there, find it. I think Jerrine would work better if they had, like whoever finds the best artwork win gets to keep, you have an incentive, like the Amazing Race. Like, you know, you sort of go, first person back with the best artwork they can pick. Maybe they don't get that artwork because it's the best, but, you know, there are a lot of artworks in this movie they found. I'm sure they could have just taken, like, a little Rembrandt or something.
So, the teams we get, some of the duos, John Goodman and Jean Dujardin.
John and Jun.
Bill Murray and Bob Balaban.
Bill and Bob.
Matt Damon and Kate Blanchett.
Matt and Kate.
And George Clooney and Hugh Bonneville.
GC and HB. Although, to be fair, George Clooney and Hugh Bonneville break up quite a bit. Like,
we're kind of just...
Yeah.
Some of these spend a lot of time together. Some of we just kind of group them because they were the most convenient pairings.
Yeah.
But we believe that these encompass all the archetypes of any possible pairing on any sort of artwork, treasure hunting mission.
Yeah.
Of these four types of pairings, what type do you think would best describe us on a treasure hunting mission?
Okay, so what team could we relief pitch for, almost?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Matt Damon and Kate Blanchett. I think they're, like, first off the board. And not just because she's a woman, and I don't even know there's any, like, romantic stuff there, but, like, they're pretty boring. Like, Bill Murray really annoys Bob Balaban, doesn't he? He, like, teases him all the time, and I think Bob Balaban learns to love him. Is that our relationship? Like,
is this where one of us got... I'll be honest, man, I found you so annoying all these years. You've been jesting in fun, but really, I've not been in on it. I really tire of all these jabs.
Yeah. I think it's been a bit more back and forth with us, and I feel like Bob Balaban's probably a bit more of a wet blanket than either of us, so I think maybe that's not us. So we're down to two teams. I feel like it's John and John.
I feel like George and Hugh are kind of the two most stick-in-the-muds.
Yeah.
Whereas John and John are more like putting themselves out there. They get stuff done.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when it comes to it, there's a potential sniper or whatever. They're like, okay, I'll run here and you go there. It's like, no, you go there and I'll run here.
Yeah, and it seems like they're fun enough too. Like, they have a bit of a joke. They don't take it too seriously. So that's good. Yeah. Like, I feel like it was Bill and George, maybe that'd be us. But that's not one of the theories.
We just want to... But then we'd have to argue who gets to be Bill Murray.
Cool. I'm happy to be George Clooney if you're Bill Murray. Like, I think in real life, if you were George Clooney, that'd be pretty cool.
Okay. So now that we've decided that we're John Goodman and John Dujardin, it's time to decide what to give the film for our screen verdict rating. I'm going to say that The Monuments Men starts off okay. Decent premise, good cast, couple of funny moments, but really loses the pacing, kind of gets stuck in between two tones. At the end, you don't really feel much of a payoff for that investment in time, but it's quite watchable just because of the characters and the performances. It's the script that let it down. It's pretty much the definition of an average film, so I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10.
Mm. I agree with David Stratton. This film had a lot of potential. I like the premise. Treasure hunting right under the Nazi noses. I like it. For art, cool. Great cast. Interesting sort of idea about the value of art in our society. But yeah, it sort of falls short in sort of nearly every way. Like, it just does not live up to that potential, and you're constantly reminded of it during the film. It's just haphazard. Haphazard plotting and things like that. That being said, all these actors are very engaging. It is fun. It's not a bad film. It's got its nice moments. So I'll give it a 6 out of 10. Hey, here's an interesting question. There's a massive war. World War... We're up to 3, right? World War 3 breaks out, right? Tomorrow. Art is at risk, okay? What are the artworks we're trying to save today?
I know the Facebook header. The funniest Google background was...
The doodles? Are you saying the doodles are today's artwork?
Yeah.
I was thinking TV shows.
Like episodes of The Wire.
Yeah. Like, you've got to be, like, Breaking Bad, Breaking Bad, The Sopranos, The West Wing. Like, I feel like that's Mad Men. Like, this is what we need to be going. Arrested Development.
Yeah, not just the art itself, but, you know, the impact that it had, things surrounding that, maybe reviews of that artwork, maybe in a podcast form.
You said the screen verdict podcasts are the art of the next world war that needs to be saved. I'd agree.
I don't think we should be depriving future generations of the screen verdict podcast. That's all I'm saying.
There's worse things people could be protecting in war. So I agree. I think... the Google Doodles, the TV series, and the Screen Verdict podcast are...
Your trio of treasure. To,
yeah, yes. The treasure are what the future Monuments Men 2.0 will be rescuing in World War 3. Obviously, the cloud might make this a little easier. So, let's move on to housekeeping. We haven't had housekeeping in ages. That's the problem with TV shows. There's so much to talk about. You know, 7 hours of True Detective. There's some things to talk about.
The Oscars.
They happened. They happened like a month ago. We haven't had time to review them. How did you find... Should we talk about the show first or the results?
Let's talk about the show. I was able to watch about half of it.
Okay.
I thought Ellen mildly exceeded my expectations. I thought it was a bit hit and miss, but some of the bits... were kind of funny. The ordering pizza, they went back to it a bit, but that was kind of funny.
Here's the thing. I think actually Ellen did something amazing at the Oscars, and I think they might ask her back next year because of it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
What she did was usually you got Oscar hosts, And sometimes they're amazing and everyone loves them, but often they're, usually they're not. And everyone just remembers the bad stuff they did. Like, that's what everyone's talking about the next day, the crash. You know, David Letterman, infamously awful Oscar host. He came out there and Uma Thurman, Oprah Winfrey, they were both nominated or whatever. And he goes, Uma, meet Oprah. Uma, Oprah. Uma, Oprah. Uma, Oprah. That was the joke. Bombed. Bombed.
What's the joke there? Just making funny sounds?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
But they're people's names.
Yeah.
Like, my name's a funny sound, haha.
Well, the joke wasn't well received. Anyway, that's all anyone's been talking about for the past sort of 20 years is his Uma Oprah joke. These are the problems these hosts have. Everyone always just complains about the things that don't work. Ellen's monologue was the definition of average. Mm-hmm. It had some
monuments, men of Oscar opening monologues.
Yeah, it was very, it was, you know, had a few funny jokes where I sort of laughed a bit and a few jokes I thought they're not really funny, but nothing awful. But her Twitter pic and her pizza delivery thing were really funny. They really worked. They involved people that were nominees and celebrities in a fun way. And it was, and that was what everyone was talking about the next day, how she crashed Twitter, how everyone had pizza and things. So she turned into, she was a host where the positives of her hosting were able to be the thing people were talking about at the water cooler. And that's something that doesn't often happen. And it also is to able to engage with social media, which is king for like any old people in the entertainment industry. They're just desperate for young people to be tweeting about them. Like,
and then the awards, I guess, just sort of went as predicted. For once, just pretty much all the favourites won. I don't think there were any upsets in any major categories.
Best short film for the animated.
Yeah, clearly a major category.
Best animated
short. Not major enough for us to talk about it on our Oscar podcast.
Best animated short film went to Not the Front Room.
But yeah, McConaughey, Lupita.
Was that the biggest surprise of Oscar night? That there wasn't a surprise on Oscar night.
Jared Leto? I guess.
Yeah. I didn't mind this, but I'm really disappointed Gravity didn't win. I'd been calling it all season. It was sort of, I would have been the guy, the first Oscar pundit to call the Gravity win. It was having a great night until Best Picture. And I was talking to Tom O'Neill the other day. He was at a thing with Oscar voters the other night, and he goes, put your hand up if you watch 12 Years a Slave. No one put their hands up. Then he said, put your hands up if you voted for 12 Years a Slave. Like, half the people put their hands up. Going, this cost me my prediction, man. But no, only one other film has won 7 Oscars or more and not won Best Picture.
What was that?
Cabaret.
Mm-hmm.
1-8. Beaten by The Godfather for Best Picture. So in that case, maybe the correct decision was made.
My biggest thing coming out of the Oscars was a question to pose to you, Matt.
Okay. I will maybe answer it depending on the question. No, you can ask me any question right now. I will answer it. I will answer honestly.
Might change my question now. Any fan of the podcast would know that Matt is a huge fan of Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah. I like Jennifer Lawrence, but I think Matt in particular.
Yeah.
Yes,
I am. There you go. Is that your question? Just wanted to confirm.
That being part one. Part two, any long-time listener of the podcast would know that Matt doesn't really like short hair.
Yeah.
There have been quite a few actresses that he likes wear short hair for a certain role and he not be a fan of it. Everyone loves the red carpet talk, or almost more than the actual Oscars themselves, the fashion police. And at the Oscars, J-Law rocked up on the red carpet with short hair. Matt, what was your verdict?
First, I gotta say to all the ladies listening, we're not talking about, like, if you just, you know, oh, my hair doesn't go past my shoulders, will Matt ever like me? Like, don't worry, man, okay? Like, It's not a huge deal. And it's like, just like, you know, relatively, it's not like I really like long hair or anything. Like, just those pixie cuts that seem to be, you know.
It's Rapunzel yeah. or nothing. Yeah.
So it's those pixie cuts that are pretty in and pretty fashionable. So it's not, you know, you're wearing one, you're probably doing the right thing. But, look, it looked fine on Jennifer Lawrence. I think I prefer her with long hair. I think she looks nicer, head of hair on her. But you know, honestly, if she were to ask me out, I wouldn't say no because of the short haircuts.
Come back to me in 2 months.
Sure, we can grab dinner when that's grown out a bit longer. No, of course not. And I would actually say no to date with a girl because she has short hair, regardless of how short that hair is. There's an interesting debate that erupted on Facebook the other day with some of my friends, and it was whether The Lion King is a classic movie. Just quickly, what's your view on this?
Yes, instant yes.
Instant yes. I weigh in saying it is undeniably a classic.
There we go.
Yeah.
Verdict reasoning comes into play.
Yeah, because it's iconic.
Mm.
There are scenes which you remember. It's iconic for the right reasons. People like it. It's not like, you know, oh, it's the worst film of all time. So it's well liked, it's iconic, and it's held up over time, and it has nostalgia value. Like, all those things would just be instant classic, I would think. You can argue great, or if you don't like the film, maybe you could argue great's a subjective thing and classic's more a consensus thing. So it's a great, up for debate, classic. You just cannot argue this, regardless of what some people are claiming.
Example of that would be, I enjoyed Citizen Kane, but it didn't live up to the hype for me. I thought it was a tiny bit overrated, but I wouldn't argue that it's a classic.
It's definitely a classic. Okay, now, here's one argument that I heard that was a bit bizarre. Some thought it cannot be considered a classic because it's not original. Because it's based off Hamlet, which is the classic.
I feel like The Lion King has enough of its own original qualities for that not to be a factor for me.
The problem with this line of thinking
is so many things are influenced or based on so many other things.
It would mean you could never consider an adapted work a classic.
Mm.
Goodbye to Kill a Mockingbird. Goodbye, I don't know, anything adapted. And what about stuff that's based off true stories? That's not original. Like, you know, The Monuments Men, which I'm sure is vying for a classic film spot. Like, it was based off some, like, well, it was based off a book, which was based off a war. Like, but anyway, so I asked this person, said, what would you consider a classic? They said Breakfast at Tiffany's.
It's based on a book.
Yeah.
Did they know that?
I explained that to them, and then they didn't want to discuss it further.
Yeah, you got to backpedal on one front or the other in that situation.
They tried to maintain both arguments. They just went, look, I don't want to argue now, remove themselves from the situation.
Just some other quick film-related housekeeping.
Yeah.
I believe in our Wolf of Wall Street podcast, we addressed what we thought were some of the top film stars of today.
Yes.
Now, a couple of fans of the podcast said, oh, you know, we like this list, you know, interesting what you thought were the top five male film stars. Where's the top five female film stars?
Okay, this is fair enough.
So, this housekeeping is running on a little bit, but maybe in the next week, we'll think of some of our top female movie stars. And you can let us know on the Facebook page who you think should be considered for the list.
I thought the last list we did was just either just best five film stars.
I think that's even worse. We failed to recognize.
Well, do a better job, ladies. No, I'm joking. I'm kidding. That's a great idea. Let's do that. Let's do that next week. If you've got suggestions, post them on our Facebook page.
Facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast.
Yes, and post them. We'll consider them and then pick our five.
And then we'll just write Jennifer Lawrence down five times anyway.
Well, it's going to be our breast above Jennifer Lawrence for one. So, just the last bit of housekeeping, and I think this is something that I would like us to address as Screen Verdict, and that was, and it's something, Sam, we don't really get into much sad stuff on the podcast, but over the summer, we did, the Australian summer, we did see the passing of Philip Seymour Hoffman. And and he is someone that we had said on the podcast, at least I had, I think you agreed, maybe not.
Yeah, very much so.
That I thought he was one of the five best working actors today. Big fan of him. He did such a good job in so many movies, and he was often the standout from any movie he was in.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's hard to pick, but Synecdoche, New York is just stunning. It's just such a heavy-hitting performance.
I've never seen that. I think it would be a good time for me to see that now.
If you're in that kind of mood, it is that kind of film.
Yeah, so I don't think there's many actors that we would make a bit of a serious sort of tribute to on the podcast, but I did want to do it for Philip because I think he was great.
Yeah, it's sad for his family and everyone knows him, and sad for everyone like us that was a fan of his work in film.
Yeah, and what a great podcast to give him a bit of a tribute when we're talking about a film that is really a homage to the impact of art on culture, art on society, and obviously the tragedy of his loss to his family and friends and stuff is the biggest tragedy here, but it's a shame that, you know, the world has been deprived of more Philip Seymour Hoffman performances because, you know, it was very stunning. Boy, I think that's the most serious we've ever gotten on the podcast. Like, that's pretty... So we've got a lot of stuff coming up.
So in some better news, the Screen Verdict podcast has some things to look forward to in the upcoming weeks.
Yes.
We'll be reviewing season 3 of Girls.
Yes.
Bonnie will be making a return to the podcast.
That's great. I'd love to hear what she thought of Girls season 3.
Yeah, she's going to be explaining half of what is actually happening from the girls' perspective that we are clearly missing when attempting to watch Girls.
Justifying all of Hannah's selfish decisions. The Walking Dead has finished. I think you need to see that.
Yeah, I'm going to catch up on The Walking Dead.
There's some stuff to talk about.
And there's some films.
Yes.
Coming out. There's a lot going on at the moment. We could review Noah.
Yes.
Could review the Lego Movie. And I'm pretty sure we're going to be reviewing The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, I thought you were going to say The Muppets Most Wanted.
Matt will probably make me review that too.
Yeah.
So... let us know what you're looking forward to.
Yeah, and you might get the film you asked for bumped up in that roster because there are a few things competing. Oh, and get excited. In a week's time, Game of Thrones season 4 kicking off. Just like last year, we're going to do a commentary on the first episode of Game of Thrones.
I'm excited for that.
I love the commentary.
And I'm also excited for the continuation of the missing cookie mystery.
Oh, yes.
So it's a busy time for Screen Verdict. We're excited. We hope you are too. And we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.